My name is Brett, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I think I've been to this meeting one time when I had I think like 90 days, and I was like still sweating and weird and like staring at people weird. And like when I got new, I stared way too long, you know what I mean? Like an uncomfortable long, you know what I'm saying? That's one of the gifts. I figured out that you look and then look away. You don't just stare at someone, you know? All right. Hi. My sobriety date is May 16th, 2004. I got sober when I was 19. And, originally I came to AA when I was like 15. And my mom, she's like, you should go check it out. And then I went to a couple meetings, drank a couple beers, went back to a couple meetings, smoked a little pot. Went to a couple more meetings, got a free pizza from a guy. That was pretty legit. I was like, wow, they like buy you shit around here if you're new. It's pretty cool. And then I went back to my mom. I was like, Mom, you know what? I know it's there. I can go back anytime I want. So when it's like really an issue, I'll go back. And she took that. Whatever. Worked out. Made it here a couple later. I don't know. I can't speculate. But I know those last 4 years from 15 to 19, I did some serious research. I had a hypothesis and a conclusion and everything. And came to be, I was an alcoholic. And I like get hitting by cars. You'll hear about that one. Born and raised in San Diego. Not too far from here. Encinitas is where I did a lot of my weird stuff. And San Luis Obispo is where I ended the weird stuff. It was really weird there. I'll tell you a little bit about that too. weird. I mean, if you can think of it, don't go there. Just don't. both of my parents are therapists. I'm going to start with that because that shit fucked me up. I got to tell you that right now. Right off the bat, I know some of you have probably seen one of those guys here and there, and they're great. But try living with them for 19 years; it's a shit show. And they are Jedis to say the least. You know what I mean? They float around the house. They don't actually walk and talk. They speak with their minds, and they're crazy. And they know things before you know things. I'm telling you right now. It'd be like, Mom, I love you, first of all. It was a great dinner, lovely ordeal. The setup was amazing. And I mean, and then I would just give her a kiss. I'm like, Mom, I'm going to go to bed because I'm tired right now. And, I'm like 15, 16, hopping out the window. And of course, like I hop out the window, like shimmy down this tree, like, all right, I'm out, like freshen up, like have my other clothes, put them on. Like, go out to the driveway, my mom's sitting out there in the nightgown, just like flexing on me, like, what are you doing? What's going on? Didn't even talk, she just like pointed at the house, and like, I moved back in. And I would always go out the bathroom window, I don't know why, the bathroom window was like this big. And at the time, I was like 285 pounds. And right next to that bathroom window, I kid you not, 2 feet next to it was like a 6-foot window. And it had like a desk underneath, and it had like a ladder on the other side. And it was like easy to get out. But for some reason, I always went out that small 2-foot window and like made all the noise and was like grunting and like, oh, God, and like to get out of it. And it just like, and that's just like my life. Hey, Brett, here's this easy path. Go that way. You'll have a great time. Things will be great. Flowers will bloom. Or go this way. You will die and do weird shit. Weird things are going to happen to you, and it's going to be weird for everybody around. To say the least, when I'm growing up with those people, I learned how to manipulate at an early age. I learned how to lie and how to lie good because I tell you, they had me. Like, my mom just knew things. My dad did too, but like more so my mom. She had that like mother instinct plus that 35 years of therapeutical, whatever you call it. I don't even know if therapeutical is a word, but it fits right for her. And like one time she dropped me off in town. And so these are some of the younger stories. She dropped me off in town and, we all met up at AMC and we're like, Mom, I'm going to go see a movie. You know what I mean? Like, Ninja Turtles is out. It's popping. We got to go. You know what I mean? Me and all the homies are going to meet down there. She's like, okay, all right, I'll drop you down. Who are you going to hang out with? Oh, Danny and Michael, you know, Alex may be there. I don't know. He got in trouble, but I don't really like hanging out with him. He does drugs. So then she would drop it. She'd be like, yeah, yeah, I feel you. And she didn't really say, I feel you, but she would be like, she dropped me off. And literally 2 hours later, I'm getting handcuffed at like the other part of town. And, you know, there was some altercation with the dude. You know, I was at Danny's house, and Danny's older brother was in an altercation with another dude, and you know how it goes. And so the police were called. Danny's parents were, his dad was the chief of police, by the way. I just found that out not too long ago. And I was like, really? We smoke pot at your house? That's a bad call. I mean, we can't do my house. We can't do my house because they're therapists, and we cannot do your house. We should find a bush somewhere and like just hang out there and set up shop. And so I'm getting arrested. I'm detained on the driveway. I'm like, yeah, street cred. It's going up to here. It was here. But now it's here. I'm like stoked on this. I'm like, for some reason, I'm excited about this. I have no idea what's going to happen to me. And of course, mom comes rolling up. Like, what? What are you doing here? Are you kidding me, mom? Or what? What? And she's like screaming. And like, are you kidding me? My son is in handcuffs. What did he do? And then like, literally everybody just starts, it starts slow. There's a little giggle. And then it's like, it's louder. And then like, literally everybody's laughing at me. Even the cops are like, oh my God, are you kidding? Like, I don't want to even deal with this lady. I'm going to give you your son. You know what I mean? It's bad. It's bad when you're in handcuffs and your mom breaks you out. And especially if you haven't made it to jail yet and you're still just sitting there. You know what I mean? You're still in handcuffs. There's like, you know, like 15 dudes on a driveway and like, oh, did you hear about Brett? Yeah. His mom got him out. She made a scene. It was great. But I don't know how the hell she found me. You know, she didn't know that I was there. That's what I'm trying to say in this long-winded, horrible story. So that's what, you know, it was just, I had to learn how to manipulate the, and I called them this since the day they, you know, and the Jedis. They were one step ahead of me. So I had to be one step ahead of them. So I naturally had to start lying and manipulating like the best of them. And that's what I started doing. First time I felt out of place, like I didn't belong, I would say it was in the third grade. I'm not going to lie to you about this one. The third grade, I felt totally out of place. Like if I would have known a drink would have taken care of it, I probably would have taken a drink right there. And they were playing this game called Popcorn. Popcorn is a game. Let me explain this horrible game influenced by the government to induce alcoholism in kids. One person is called on and they read. They read a paragraph or so of literature. And then she would call on somebody else. And then when I would get called on, I wouldn't know what to do because I didn't know how to read and I was dyslexic and I had a learning disability and I had ADD. And so it was really, really tough for me on a serious note. Like I felt like everybody else in that classroom can read. They were all doing so well and I wasn't. And I felt like I could crawl out of my skin and go like eat a box of candy or something. I don't know what. There was nothing that could make me feel better in those moments. So, and not only that, like I had to take this medication called Adderall and Ritalin at like 8 years old, like 20 milligrams every 6 minutes. or else I was like bouncing off the walls. Like literally, if I didn't have it at the school and they ran out, my parents couldn't bring it. It was like, all right, we got to send your son home. I'm sorry. We're just not going to do it today. It's just not today. It's not going to happen. So I would leave classroom early before recess and I would go take these pills. And I was like, why isn't Susie coming with me to take these pills? I mean, these are amazing. First of all, I get a lot of studying done and I don't eat ever until dinner time. So you know what? I felt out of place. You know what I mean? I felt out of place. When I was 13, I had a rendezvous with alcohol and it was beautiful. And I'm going to tell you about it. And, there was a party, a wedding, and my cousins were getting married, and I was supposed to be the ring bearer. Let me tell you what, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to give you a little piece of the puzzle. I didn't show up for my engagement, and so I'm supposed to be this ring bearer, and I find this tub. They've got these tubs at weddings nowadays, I guess, and we're in a park. It's beautiful, you know, nice summer day. And I find this tub and there's juice in it. I was like, hey, juice. Looks great to me. I'm 13 years old. Juice is like the greatest thing since sliced bread. We love juice at 13, right? I've got like juice lines on my face all the time. So I find this juice and I start drinking a cup. It tastes a little different, but it tastes great and it has a warm thing going down. So I'm into it. My dad comes up, the other therapist. He comes up and he grabs a cup and he's like, what are you doing? I was like, Dad, I'm drinking juice. Don, what's the deal? Chill out, bro. I'm drinking some juice. He's like, no, Brett, this is bad juice. Dad, what does that even mean right now at 13? So you're telling me that, what, I mean, is it like the shelf life is wrong or it's out of date? Like what? No, just trust me, it's bad, don't drink it. Of course, like my antennas like go up. I'm like, all right, Dad, I won't. So it's like, and then like I go back, I drink like five or six. It was like Everclear inside of this jungle juice. And it was like five or six cups for a 13-year-old. I gotta tell you, I'm known around my family for Captain Inappropriate dancing with relatives inappropriately, and that's what happened that day. I literally freak danced with my grandma, and I'm not ashamed to say it here from the podium. It was so weird looking back on it now. God rest her soul. I am sorry, but and then the wedding's going on, and I'm supposed to show up for this event and carry this ring down, and I'm nowhere to be found. Already at the age of 13, I can't show up for life. You know what I mean? When alcohol is produced inside of my body, there's some sort of reaction that happens where I feel amazing and great and no one else matters. No one else even comes close to what's going on with me because I am the most important person in the world. And my dad found me rolling around in some leaves having a grand old time. He just looked at me. You know what I mean? Just that he's stared right through my skull, and I just looked back up at him and I didn't say a word. Usually I would have some great little funny thing that would get myself out of it, but not today. I didn't care. I just didn't care. I felt amazing, and he knew, I knew, we had an understanding. He threw me over his shoulder and drove me home in the 83 Volvo, and which was army green, and I have a resentment against it because the dude makes so much money, but he has this, never mind. Literally was the first thing on my resentment is 83 Volvo, high school drop-offs, ruined my life. That was my first run-in, and I knew at that moment I was like, me and this alcohol thing or me and this jungle juice thing, we are gonna have some fun together, because I wanted to feel that way again and again and again. I take everything to the extreme, everything, the way that I eat, sex, like watching videos, like, if I find a TV show that I like, it's like, okay, I love like House. I don't know about this. I watched the first episode. I'm already through the seasons and I found it yesterday. You know what I mean? It's like, Brett, what are you doing? Nothing. Don't talk to me. I'm watching House. And it's just like, it's creepy how I just, what makes me feel good, I want it. I want to produce it all the time in my life. You know what I mean? So that when I found that, naturally, I felt like I found like what I had been looking for. You know, I felt like I had found what was going to take care of all my problems, you know. And I didn't think that way at 13, but I was like, wow, that was amazing. I had fun, and I want to do that again, you know. So I got to high school, you know, I made it there. Shit got weird there. You know, I met some dudes that were, you know, one of my best friend's mom, she was a professional dancer in Vegas, and she would leave for, you know, a good month or so and leave these 16-year-old children. Like, you guys got this, right? All right. You good, right? You're on probation, but you got this, right? You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, it was a weird situation, and we could do whatever the hell we wanted, which was great, you know, which also led me to get into a boarding school in the middle of Kansas, which was not great, I got to tell you. But there, I mean, my parents had the best intentions with this one. And there is where I found, like, so many other amazing outside issues that, you know, I don't know, I just remember walking in the principal's office and Mr. McMahon, I looked at him. It was like a TV show. It was great. I looked at him, and my parents left the room. They had to sign some paperwork in another office. He's like, I read your file. I was like, oh, yeah? What'd you think? And then he's like, let me tell you something, Brett. You're not getting out of here Not today, not never. You're staying here for the rest of your high school career. I was like, all right, bro, we'll see about that. Don't call me, bro. And it was like my, so 9 months later, I was going home, and, you know, it was like literally at the end, it was just like I was popping bottles in the classroom and drinking them. I just wanted to go back to California. I was like this this kid in the middle of Kansas, and, you know, I corrupted a lot of people out there. And it's, I got to tell you, when there's a boarding school and it's an international boarding school, it's hard to make amends when people are from like Taiwan and like Tibet and like Africa, and like literally, God, like thank God for Facebook and Skype, because, you know, it'd be really tough to make those amends. And, you know, so I came back and I was like, you know, it's going to be different this time. I'm going to try it different. I want to do it different. Of course, nothing changed. And now, you know, everybody else when I was younger that wasn't doing the things that I was doing, now they're doing the things that I was doing. And I was one step ahead, because in Kansas, there's nothing to do but drugs. I got to tell you that right now. It's driving trucks, waving on the highway, like corn and horses and drugs, and that's it. Like literally, and Budweiser beer. Like, what, you're drinking at Coolers? All right, get this guy out of here. Get him out. You know, it's just, and it's like I went to so many rodeos and I shot so many guns. It was just like so weird and like obscene to me. And it was just like so many people never saw the ocean. And I was like, what? What do you do for bodies of water that are large and have salt water in them? What do you do? And it's like, I don't know. It's just like weird. I guess I've never seen the flattest place ever in the world. And there's nothing to do but smoke meth. All right, let's do it. So I came back, you know, I thought it was going to be different. And, you know, it wasn't, you know what I mean? And I just, things progressed. They started progressing. I started caring less. I started, you know, not caring like what you thought anymore. And it started hurting my mom, which is, I'm a huge mother's boy. And it started like really kind of a, like when I would wake up and like, you know, I had thrown up all over the room, or, you know, I'd wet the bed, or my pants were still around my ankles, and I just passed out before, and like my mom's like waking me up, and it's like, it's sad, and it hurt, you know what I mean? And that's like where I got to see, everything came down to like how I affected my mom for some reason, I don't know. And whatever, she enabled me all the way through to college. I filled out some applications, and I graduated from high school, and I filled out some applications for some colleges, and I didn't get accepted to a lot, but I did get accepted to one. And it was in SLO, San Luis Obispo, and I was like, Dad, see, look at it, I got accepted. He's like, Brett, that's a community college. Everyone gets accepted to community college. All right. What's up with the positive reinforcement, you therapist? Come on. So I went to this, because I was like, yes, you know, this is it. This is what's going to change my life. I'm going to go to college. It's going to really work out this time. You know, I'm going to get some sticky notes. I'm going to put them around my computer with things that I have to do. And I'm going to make lists. And like, I'm going to do homework and I have notebooks. And I'm going to go to class. I'm going to have a bus ticket because I'm going to take the bus. I'm not going to rely on anybody on this one. This is all me. I'm going to make this happen. I got a computer, you know, new sheets, new towels. Parents were all excited. As soon as they dropped me off, it was literally, I think I dropped a class that day. And I was like, this is, I hadn't even shown up to class yet. I was like, yeah, this is too hard. This, I don't know about math. No, not going to do it. At the end of the year, all I had was photography, and I was doing great. It's like, Brett, how you doing? Yeah, I gotta go. And that's where it all happened. You know what I mean? That's where I really got to see that I could not live life on my own with alcohol and drugs involved. It was beautiful. It was the most beautiful, ugliest thing in the world, and I had so much fun. And I have so many amends from that year. And I hurt so many people. And I got to tell you, I feel bad about what I had done. But what I had done had got me to the place where I was willing to get sober. You know what I mean? And at that time, it was just like I found all these outside issues plus alcohol. Alcohol was always there. You know what I mean? But combined with this, you know, you're feeling great, and it's hitting you that much quicker. You don't have to drink that much more beer, and it happened. You know what I mean? It happened to where now I literally didn't care who you were, where you came from, what your family was about, like what anything in your life, like it didn't matter. All I really wanted to know was your name because I had to know that. I knew that much. I need to know this. If I keep on calling this head, hey dude, can I get a bong load? Hey dude, it's going to get weird after a little bit. So I had to know people's names. You know what I mean? And other than that, I stopped caring. I stopped caring about my presentation. I stopped caring about who I was. I stopped caring about all my morals, and everything just went out the window, literally went out the window. And, got into some trouble up there too, did a lot of throwing up outside my window. It was right next to my bed. Very convenient. Got to tell you, little trail down every morning, really disgusting. Hot pan of hot water, every morning. Hey guys, how you doing? Rough night. Sorry about that. And then, got beat up by a female cop. Didn't put that one on my resume. didn't do that. Literally, like I was in a blackout. All of a sudden, I come out and I just see hair. That's it. You know what I mean? I just see hair. And I guess like I like punched a window and like my wrist was like bleeding. So somebody's like, someone's trying to kill themselves. And I was like, and then she like put me against this wall, and I was like, no, let me explain it to you. If you just let me talk, I will let you know what's going on. And it's like, she like elbowed me, and like, it was just like everybody I lived in this place called Mustang Village. It was all just kids just wildly doing weird stuff. And everybody was just like surrounding, looking. And it's once again, females are bringing me down. I had the luxury. I got, when do I go to? 9:20? All right. We're right on track. Oh, there's a clock right here. It's like a spaceship right here. I got hit by a car. Not once, not twice, but three times. Like literally three times in a 9-month period. Like we're averaging, once every 3 months, we're going to get popped by a car real quick. You know what I mean? I was in a blackout, and the other one, I was skateboarding down this is the bad one. I was skateboarding down this hill, and just literally this car just clipped me, and I was just like twirling in the air and slapped things. And so, I got this prescription. And when you get hit by a car, not once, not twice, but three times, you can get whatever you want. I don't care who you are, so I got this prescription, and I started getting really addicted to these things. And, I just kept on digressing. Things that I said I would never do, I was doing twice a week and sometimes every day. And, I just felt bad. I started feeling bad. Like when I would wake up in the morning, I started feeling bad, and that never happened. And as soon as that conscience would come in, it's like, those days where you're just like, literally, bro, like, what happened last night? Can you tell me? And they're just like, nah, Brett, I don't really want to talk to you anymore. Can we just talk this last time and you tell me what happened, and then we'll part ways after that. And I'll make my decision on whether I want to talk to you anymore, asshole. I get evicted from this place that it seemed like monkeys were running the place. And like, how do you get evicted from like literally all college students, like just drinking and, doing drugs? Like, not, I get evicted from this place. They're like, Brett, we need you to leave. I'm like, really? Do you know that he's selling drugs? And like, all I'm doing is like, yeah, but the cops get called here quite a bit for you. And you stole a lot of our fire extinguishers, and we want them back. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, lo and behold, in my closet, there's 35 fire extinguishers. I don't know what I'm doing. I black out, and I just want fire extinguishers. That's it. I mean, I don't know. So one time, these guys kicked me out of a party, and I was like, you know what? In my head, I was like, you guys are a bunch of idiots. I have 35 fire extinguishers in my head. And by golly, I'm going to use them. So, of course, I, like, bust open the door, and I start spraying it before I bust open the door. So, like, they have no idea. It takes all the oxygen out of the air. They're all coming out. Then, like, I come to the guy, and I'm like, hey, who did that? We should go get him. You know, like, we should get him. That whoever sprayed a fire extinguisher in your party is an asshole. He needs the security guard, and I can help him find the guy. And it's just, literally, I'm that guy. I'll steal your wallet and then help you look for it for an hour and a half. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah, just, I don't know. Maybe, did we black out or something? I think we blacked out. Yeah, I don't know. What color was it? It was leather and gray, right? Right? That's weird. I've never seen it. So, this one morning when I'm now living with my drug dealer in his back house, when I walk out of the door because I don't have to be to class only but Monday and Wednesdays at 12:30 to 4:30 to go in the dark room and develop my film. Life is still really good, guys. Gotta tell you. I come to and I look around my room, and there's a computer in the corner that hasn't been turned on. It was turned on in the other place that I was living at, but I gotta tell you, no schoolwork happened on that thing. It had viruses by week two, and like it just shut down. Like it died, and it was like, please stop doing this to me. Whatever, it was a weird kid. And so I look around the room, the computer's there, and my clothes haven't been washed in a while. I don't use sheets anymore because I wet the bed all the time, and I throw up all over the place, and I black out. Next to me is, my medicine that is just waiting there for, I set it up right before I go to bed, so it's there as soon as I wake up in the morning, and I have a miserable existence. That's what's coming to my head. And the next thing that comes into my head is I say it out loud with no one around. I said, fuck, man, I'm an alcoholic. I wish I could take that back. You know what I mean? I grabbed it. I was like, whoa, come back. And then the phone rang, of course. And the phone rang, and it was this girl. She always called me for some reason, like, after bad shit happened. It was like, hey, I just was thinking about you, and how are you? I'm like, well, I think I'm an alcoholic. She's like, wow, well, your brother's in the program. Why don't you talk to him? I was like, yeah, you know, I thought of that too. And I think I'm going to call him tomorrow because today is just not a good day to get sober. There's this huge party down in San Diego, and we'll get at it after that. Of course, I go to San Diego, and I play basketball, 300 pounds at this point. And why am I playing basketball? I've never played basketball a day in my life. But for some reason, I'm going to play basketball with a bunch of people I don't even know. Maybe one dude I knew, and he didn't even speak English. We just smoked pot together down at the beach. And so I go, and I fracture my thumb. This is where my thinking goes when I fracture my thumb. Automatically, I go, oh, I can get something for this fractured thumb. I go to the pharmacy. First I go to the doctor, and she goes, well, Brett, you have a hairline fractured thumb. I'm going to give you 10 Vicodin for this. And I was like, 10? She's like, yeah, 10. It's a hairline fracture. You'll be all right. I'm like, all right, fine. She turns around. I add a zero, real swift, like, you know what I mean? Real Jedi-like. I could have added a 4 and made that 1 into a 4. 40 would have gotten away okay, but I wanted 100. You know what I'm saying? I wanted 100. And so I take it to CVS, and Carol's standing there, and Carol's like, 100? Are you dying of cancer? What's wrong with you, actually? I was like, a fractured thumb. It's real bad hairline. The worst kind of hairline. You know what I mean? Bad. Real bad. Real nasty. You know what I mean? Just aching pain, like, all the time. Like, I can't even feel my right arm right now. It's bad. She's like, all right, are you sure? I was like, yes. Are you sure you want 100 Vicodin? Yes, Carol, I'm sure. I want 100 Vicodin. So I'll come back in 10 minutes. I come back in 10 minutes, and there's two officers. One on each side. I can still get away, guys. I can still, they haven't seen me yet. I can still get away. But no. Hi, how you doing? Carol, 100 Vicodin, me, you, right now. Hi, guys, what's going on? Are you Brett? Yeah. I'm kind of busy, though, guys. I still didn't put it together, and they're like, well, you know that they check with doctors anything over a certain amount. They start checking back with the doctors, anything that's a narcotic. So I got arrested. And now I've got, you know, I'm probation in two different counties. But, you know, this time was literally different. I went inside of that, and I just knew that it was over. When they put those handcuffs on me, I just knew it was over. And they put the handcuffs on me. I went to jail. I still had a lot of pills from my back injury in my pocket that I could utilize at any time. But of course, I wanted 100 more Vicodin because that wasn't enough. The 100 that were in my pocket was not enough. And so I'm sitting in this jail cell, and because it got kind of weird and rough, and they kind of, you know, backseat, and some of them spilled out into my pocket, and I was wearing these cargo pants, and I'm in this jail cell, and there's cameras literally all around in the jail cell. And I remember going to the same jail cell when I was like in the third grade, and like it was like for a school field trip, and looking at these jail cells, it was like right in Encinitas. And I was just like, wow, you must be a loser when you come in here. And I looked at my friend, and he's like, yeah, losers only come in here. And of course, this is where I end up. And I'm taking these pills out of my pocket, and they're watching me. They're like literally 4 feet, and I start see them starting to come over to me, and I'm just shoving these pills into my mouth, and I start chewing them up, and I swallow God knows how many. And he comes in, he's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, literally looks at me and like, what is wrong with you? And I literally dropped to my knees and I said, I can't stop. I don't know how to stop. I'm an addict, and I don't know how to stop this. I don't think I said I'm an addict, but I was like, I don't know how to stop. He put his arm around me and he said, it's okay. We're going to find you some help. And it, it's kind of a moment that I had with him. You know what I mean? So, then they transferred me to county, and this is where stuff kind of gets weird. So they put me in the medical ward, and FYI, they were giving me better drugs inside of there than I was on the outside. Weird situation. So I called my mom on Mother's Day. Well, I had called my parents a couple days before that, and I was like, of course, I was like, I need a bailout. You know what I mean? I need to get out of here. And my dad hung up the phone like he always does, and because he's the tough love type of dude. And my mom, I was like, I gotta get my mom. She'll get it. And I call her, and she was with my dad, so that plan was nil automatically. So she hung up the phone, and then I call back on Mother's Day, and she has to hear that collect call from Vista County, and she accepts, and I wish her a happy Mother's Day. And I start crying like uncontrollably. FYI, if you're in jail and you're talking to your mom, don't cry. It's a bad look. It's a really bad look. And she started crying. I was like, Mom, I want some help. I want to get sober. I want to do something different than what I'm doing. And she's like, that's all I needed you. That's all I needed to hear you say. And, they, helped me out with a lawyer. And, I remember going into court. This is when, you know, I feel like from the moment I admitted I was an alcoholic, that God at that moment said, okay, about time this dude said he's an alcoholic. Now I can do my work. And I feel like he just swooped in. He did for me what I couldn't do for myself, hands down. From that moment that I admitted I was an alcoholic, all the steps to when I walked into this recovery house were perfect. Amazing, beautiful steps that I couldn't have orchestrated. I don't think a movie could orchestrate it. It was just perfect. Because I was handcuffed to this dude that I was in, you know, special ed class with. And I was like, what are you doing here? And he was like, oh, I did a beer run. I just started flashing my life forward. And I saw where my life was going. And they walked me in, put me in a cage. In a cage, like a box cage. And my dad was sitting across. He didn't even look at me. Like, not once. And he got me a lawyer, and then they said, we want Brett to be released on to go to treatment. His crime has to deal with drugs and alcohol, and we feel like he should get a shot at treatment. And the judge asked, well, where do you want to send him? And he said, New Life House in Torrance, California. And the bailiff that brought me in, at New Life House, they have this buddy system, a big brother, if you will. And when my brother was in this house, his big brother was this guy, Mikey. His name was Mikey. And his dad was the bailiff that brought me into. So, like, he was there. And it was just like this weird spiritual, and I didn't get to know all these things until I had had some time sober, until I, like, got to look back at all this stuff. So, I went to this place called New Life House, and it was the most amazing thing that ever happened to me, hands down. You know what I mean? And It was just really like, it was the toughest, hardest thing. It was an 18-month like boot camp style, nose and toes against the wall. We're going to write thousands of words. You're not going to look at girls. You're not going to have a cell phone. You can't drink energy drinks. You're in bed at this time. You're up at this time. You're making breakfast. Then you're going to do some chores. And then, you know what I mean? And then we're going to have a group. And we're going to talk about it. And then we're going to pull each other's covers and hold each other accountable and start doing our laundry. Like all these different things that I'd never done before. You know what I mean? I'd never done any of these things. So I just hopped right in because I didn't know what else to do. Like I faked it till I made it. You know what I mean? It was just like, I was uncomfortable. How do I get comfortable? Start doing what these dudes are doing around me. You know what I mean? So I started doing what they were doing. And I started holding people accountable. I started brushing my teeth. I started, putting clean clothes on. I started making my bed every day. And I started going to meetings. And the greatest thing that they had given me at this house was the introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And we went to meetings every day. You know what I mean? We went to meetings every day. We had a big Wednesday group every Wednesday. And that was the group where, the program director would come in and he would shift through all the bullshit in the house and he would make all the things right. He'd iron everything out and then the next week it would go on and it would happen again. But they told me to get a sponsor. They told me to start working steps and they told me to basically get sober and they showed me how. And so I got a sponsor and I started working these steps. And things started changing. I started feeling better. I started caring about people. I started talking to my parents on a weekly basis and asking them how they were doing. Not like, hey, yo, I need another phone card. Or like, hey, when you come up, can I get a pair of shoes this weekend? Like, what's up? Like, my shoes are ready. You know what I mean? It was like, how are you? Like, what's going on in your life? How's work? You know what I mean? It's crazy to me. My dad flipped out. You know what I mean? He's like, literally, man, like, the year before you got sober, I don't think we spoke one sentence. Not because we didn't like talking, because you didn't know how to talk anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like you were mumbling like half the time on the phone. So I did this house and I went through this and it was beautiful, man. I love that place. I still go back to that place. I was there today. You know what I mean? 7 years later, I will always be indebted to this place. I will always go back. I sponsor a couple guys there, and I keep going back because then I get to show these guys, the 30 dudes that are inside this house, like, hey, man, it's possible. You can go out and get an apartment, have a girlfriend, have a good job, and, have a cell phone. That tripped me out. Cell phones, paying my bills. The little things like that tripped me out where people are like, oh, I just got an amazing job, and I own a business. I was like, bro, I pay my DirecTV bill every month. It's like, it's pretty hot. You know what I'm saying? Shit's popping right now. Like, well, what are you doing? I was like, well, I just paid my DirecTV bill. What do you got? And what they told me there, and this is where it shifted for me. I was in one of those big Wednesday groups, and it was all about me at this time. And I was sitting on the floor. And they used to make you sit on the floor with your shoes off on the carpet because it was basically break you down until you can be built back up. And if you were already broken down, it's like, let's build this dude up. You know what I mean? And they broke me down until I had nothing, until I was naked. And they built me back up into a man. And I believe that. And I believe that it helped me out a great deal. Because when I was sitting in this group and he told me, I was like, dude, I don't think this thing's going to work for me. I don't know if any of you have ever had that feeling where, how is it going to work for me? Like, is this thing going to really work for this alcoholic? Like, am I going to be one of the guys that leaves? Like, I don't want to be that guy. You know, I want to be the guy that stays here. And he said, look, check it out. Just chill out. Just stop moving and being weird, you weirdo. And he looked at me and he's like, check it out. This is the secret to staying sober. I'm going to tell you this right now. And I was like, okay, finally. God, that's all I wanted, Mike. That's it. Just give it to me. Give it to me straight. I can handle this. I got this. I'm looking forward to paying bills. Let's go. Come on. And he said, you know what? If you go to meetings, you work your steps, you have a sponsor that you work those steps with, you find a higher power through those steps that you work, and you give that back to somebody else, I don't think you'll ever get loaded. Now, I can't say ever because it's a one day at a time thing, but how many newcomers that relapse and come back out are doing all those things on a regular basis? This is what he said to me. This is his opinion and now is my opinion. You know what I mean? How many people that are doing those things? Because for this alcoholic over here, I need to keep it super simple. Because if I start, sometimes when I wake up in the morning, the only thing that makes sense is the fact that I'm an alcoholic. Not the money that's not coming in, not the girlfriend that's freaking me out, not the parents that are like, we need you to come down and like help us with this. And it's like, you know, the only thing that makes sense is like, hey, if I drink today, shit's going to get bad. And I'm not going to stop drinking. You know what I mean? If I pop some sort of a pill, that first drink is the drink that gets me drunk. That makes sense to me. Everything else, when people drink a half a beer and set it down, it's like static to me. It doesn't even make sense. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And it freaks me out, to be honest with you. And I always yell at people. I was like, you're not going to finish that thing? You're an asshole. You know that? Somebody worked really hard to make that thing, and you're just going to waste it? You're a dick. It's my brother. We're going to a Charger game. He's like, bro, chill out. I'm good. I've had like two of these. I was like, yeah, whatever, asshole. He's like, do you want? No. So those five things, I've been doing those continually over the last 7 years, and it's been working for me. And I'm not perfect. I got to tell you that right now. And so you may think so. I make a tremendous amount of mistakes. But today, the difference between the mistakes that I used to make back in the day is today I get to make those wrongs right. You know, I have the ability to go out and make amends. I have the ability to say, hey, do you mind if I talk to you for a couple of minutes? And then pull someone aside and make my wrongs right and do whatever they feel is necessary to make that wrong right. And that's a beautiful gift. I have a structured way of living. And if I follow that structured way of living, like, my life is going to get better. I realize that. I get that and I understand that. And that's why I feel like me and my higher power have made a pact that I'm going to keep doing this to stick around here. Because I'm curious, man. I'm curious when newcomers go out, and I always ask them, I'm like, hey, so what happened? Like, oh, bro, I stopped talking to my sponsor. That higher power thing, it wasn't for me. Yeah, those steps, I don't know. I don't know about that. If there was an escalator, yeah, I would do that. But the step, I don't know. And then, you know, those meetings, you know, I don't like that meeting. That guy said some shit to me, and I don't want to go back. He told me to, like, pick up some butt cans and, like, clean some shit. I'm not into it. You know what I mean? And it's always one of those things, if not all. And if one thing goes, I feel like some of them go. So I know that, like, when those things start to go, I start to feel it. You know, I start to feel like where that billboard with dude drinking the Budweiser in the jacuzzi with all the girls, like, oh, that could happen. That's what it would be like. And that's not what it's like for me. It's like I'm in my room stabbing a can of SpaghettiOs in my closet because I don't want to go downstairs to get a can opener. And a blackout, and then I wake up and I have stab marks in my hand, and there's SpaghettiOs all over my chest with blood. I don't know what happened. I got in a fight with, you know, Mr. SpaghettiOs, and like, you should see him. But it's like, literally, I try to picture myself in this closet, just like a caveman, just stabbing the SpaghettiOs with a destroyer knife this big with my left hand because I'm right-handed. You know what I mean? It's like, literally, I remember that, just SpaghettiOs in my chest hair, just SpaghettiOs and blood everywhere. I was like, oh my God, I killed SpaghettiOs everywhere. I was hungry that night. I'll wrap up with this. If you're new, this is for you. I want this to be for you. This is not because I feel like I'm a gnarly person. This is because I believe that you can stay sober no matter what. Anything that has happened to me in my life that I felt necessary to drink was not necessary. At all. Because I, in these situations, I've never thought, oh, a drink would make this better. Oh, some Vicodin would make this better. Oh, snorting a line would make this better. In my second year of sobriety, my dad had cancer. Then my mom had a heart problem, which they couldn't figure it out for a year or so. She was eating a bunch of iron, and like she had to like do a bunch of things. She was really sick. That happened. I was in a relationship with a girl, and we got out of that. That's so-so. That stuff hurts, though. I got to tell you, that stuff hurts more than a lot of other stuff. And then she had sex with my best friend, by the way. No big whoop. That just happened. I'm cool, though. My best friend died that I got sober with. Randomly, one morning, he went. There was this tradition, I guess, this unknown tradition. I never did it. I thought they were a bunch of idiots. They jump off the Manhattan Beach Pier and swim back in. And he jumped off, his head hit one of the pylons, and he drowned. Then one of my best friends that I had introduced some certain drugs to died of those certain drugs. And You know, it was hard getting through these things, but the last thing that happened that I feel like was the icebreaker in all this, where I just literally lost my mind. This all happened in a 2-year period. I literally lost my mind. Well, there's one more actually. My little brother went missing for a week, and that's right around the time where the show 48 Hours came out. And like, you know, my little brother's gone and he's missing and he's in college and no one knows where he's at. He's found left for dead in the middle of the woods. Somebody had hit him over the head and drug his body out there. He had gone through all of his bowel movements. He didn't remember anything. Didn't even remember my mom when she showed up. And like, that's my little guy. You know, that's my only little brother. And that was really tough, sitting there for a week and not knowing whether or not I was going to ever see this dude again, and whether or not I was ever going to hug him and kiss him and tell him I loved him. Or did I get to tell him I love him? Did I leave it on good terms? You know, what was the last conversation I had with him? You know, all those things. And then the last thing, when I was driving north on the one, I just got off a job. I work in the film industry, and I just got on this job, and I was going to take this girl out to dinner. The girlfriend at the time, she was my girlfriend. I was going to take her out to dinner, and I started driving north, and I just had this weird feeling. Started right before Neptune's Nest, a 20-year-old kid stepped in front of my truck, and I killed him instantly. And he was pretty loaded. You know, he was drunk, and he had a bunch of Valium in his system, and Xanax, and that'll change a person. You know what I mean? And I was right in front of a bar. I was over the age. I could have taken a drink. First thing I did is I called another alcoholic. That's all I knew to do. I called this dude that ran the program that I went through, and it's like he had heard it 1,000 times. You know, why I've been hit by 3 cars, and this dude, you know, why me? First of all, I got really grateful. And the second thing that happened is, like, it really made sense that anytime I drink and use, all bets are off. All bets are off. Loaded gun, ticking time bomb, it's a gamble. Because, if you take a drink, or if I take a drink, I can't tell you what's going to happen. But if I go to work, I can pretty much tell you what's going to happen sober. I'm going to tell you I'm going to go there, I'm going to build some shit, and I'm going to, you know, J-Lo is going to come walking down, and then, you know, we'll break down the set, and then we'll go. But, you know, when I drink and use, all bets are off. And that's what I learned, you know, through all that. And the other thing that I learned through all those things is what I said in the beginning, the newcomer, this one's for you. You don't have to drink no matter what. Bottom line, I feel like that's my message to you. I feel like that's what I've gone through so I could tell you guys, and so I could share that with another alcoholic, that you don't have to drink no matter what. And that's what makes sense to me, and that's what I've found here. Those 5 simple things have helped me to stay through thick and thin of life, because life is going to happen whether I'm drunk or not. So if you're new, you know, you'll hear it every meeting you go to, I swear, and I swear I would never say this when I started speaking, or if I ever spoke at a meeting, keep coming back, grab a sponsor, and you'll hear it every time. Work those steps. Find a higher power, and you know, I hope that you get to see what I've seen. I hope that you get to get what I've gotten in my life, my family, my beautiful girlfriend, the apartment that I live at, like all those material items. But no, waking up in the morning and knowing who I am and being okay with Brett, just being cool, like no K-fuck, like, you know, no shitty thing can ever really bring me down, you know what I mean? And I have hard times, but I know how to deal with it today. That's something I didn't have before I got here. I didn't have anything before I got here. Thank you so much. Sorry for going over.